WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse, with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade, gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. AJ Myers joined alongside Griffin Bloomstein and Josh Rothert. We're recapping Syracuse's big win over Florida State. They had two wins since we were last heard on the airways or in your car or on your phone or wherever you're listening to the pod. First against Pitt, and then we're recording this Wednesday morning, so late last night on Tuesday, because another 9 p.m. tip, which Adrian Autry said he didn't like. I was kind of glad to hear that. Because we don't like them either. They beat Florida State 94-86. And I think the Florida State game and Pitt game, there's a lot of parallels that I want to get into at least. But this is the first week that we're all back on campus. Griffin, you were disappointed that we didn't get into the weather last week. I think the weather, first week of campus, first week of classes, is holding out pretty strong.
Yeah, nothing to complain about so far. It's like mid-30s, maybe even peaked at 40 once. It hasn't felt too cool. I think Sunday it might have been. We got a little bit of snow and it was a little cold. But since then, it hasn't been too bad. Hopefully it stays that way. But, you know, as we know, it will not. You know, it's going to be back. You know, the energy is high. You know, Q's basketball is playing in the dome. It's, you know, who knows? It's a good team. You know, that the atmosphere around campus when you might have a March Madness team is something that we haven't seen, of course, in quite some time. But that certainly the energy could pick up. Community will gather around this team if they can go on a run. So I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully that can subdue any bad weather we might receive in the coming months.
Well, they're certainly on a run. I mean, we'll get into that, obviously, but the most important thing, I don't know about you, Griffin, but I drove back on Sunday, and I made it to Syracuse from Michigan in under 6 hours, which I've never done before. And, you know, that takes a lot. Like, it takes the border agents being, you know, quick with getting me through, because I drive through Canada on my way back. And then it also takes the lake effect to hold out the entire way. And both of those happened. So it was good to be back. I didn't make it to the end of the meeting on Sunday, but man, that weather was clutch in delivering me there in a timely fashion. And it's been great since I've been on campus. I mean, it hasn't really snowed. The snow's melting a little bit. It feels like spring is on the horizon, even though it's January. It doesn't really feel like that. But, yeah, I mean, you can't really ask for much else.
No, and you always want it good when you're driving. And the spring thing, oh, don't speak so soon, Josh. I don't think where it's – and then in my 4 years, spring has not come until late April. But maybe this year is a little different. That would be nice. It was really nice last night watching Syracuse men's basketball. At times, I thought this was a really fun – I was enjoying watching this game. I'm like, wow, this is fun. They're getting out in transition. They're getting a steal. It's a lob to Donnie Freeman. It's a lob to Sadiq White. It's a lob to William Kyle. I'm like, this is a fun team to watch. Tyler Betsy, Griffin's guy, came off the bench and hit a career-high 6 three-pointers, gave him 18 points in 22 minutes. He was fantastic. And there was a lot of good signs on the offensive end. But it's still Syracuse basketball. And they still have major, major lapses in this game. And it was just like Pitt. You know, they were in control of that Pitt game over the weekend. And the next thing you know, it's down to 8 points. And Florida State got it close to as five with less than 6 minutes left. And the defensive problems are starting to show themselves. And it's kind of an opposite of what it was at the start of the season. Start of the season, it was, what's this offense? At least they're playing good defense. But defensively, they did not play well. Now, Florida State, their head coach, he comes from the NBA. And, oh, you can tell. I thought I was watching the Celtics or the Warriors last night. They put up 27 threes. They only drained 10, and most of those came in the first half. And eventually, you know, when those three-pointers stopped falling, Syracuse started to extend their lead, especially early on in that second half. And they should have run away with it, just like Pitt. They should have ran away with the game in the second half, but they simply couldn't close it out. Silly fouls, turnovers. I thought Nate George, I thought he had a great game, 13 points, but I can remember all four of his turnovers. And that isn't a good thing. He had some really costly turnovers. So did Donnie Freeman. JJ Starling threw the ball away once. And those things just allowed the Seminoles to stay in this game. And it was too close with 4 minutes left. It really was. And credit Adrian Autry. He highlighted that. He's like, we got to clean up defensively. We can't keep allowing teams to get 80 points. Because it's becoming a theme for Syracuse. And really, in these last three ACC games, yes, they're wins, but it's still like, oh boy, like they were close games against not very good teams, Griffin.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. After Florida State made like 10 7 threes in the first half, they couldn't miss. They started the game like, I think it might have been like 6 of 8, something crazy. And the good thing was like Florida State couldn't miss, but Syracuse stuck with it. Like that is something where if Syracuse is not clicking on offense and Florida State gets off to such a hot start, Florida State could be up 10, 15 points in that first half because of the amount of threes they made. It did look like an NBA team playing out there. They were just chucking threes. And Syracuse played it interesting. Like Will Kyle, they took him out because of that at some points where Syracuse tried to go a little smaller to defend the three-point line. They didn't do a good job in the first half at defending the three-point line. Credit to Florida State, they were knocking down a lot of looks and a lot of them were open. And then, like, you look at the second half, Florida State scored more points in the second half, and they only had three threes compared to seven in the first half. So then you're like, all right, well, what happened? They had 17 free throw makes. Syracuse just played sloppy, giving up a lot of and one, both sides in the second half. It was a lot of fouls, a lot of and ones. But you cannot send a team to the line for 21 foul shots in a half. That's unacceptable. And I mean, you can say what you want. Sadiq White picked up a foul and then got a technical, and that was a whole chaotic thing. After he had a great offensive play, he lost his head, and Coach Autry said that after the game. It was like, hey, we just need to play more composed. You mentioned Nate George, 13 assists. That's kind of crazy. It was funny. Like, right when the game ended, he had 11, and then I checked like 20 minutes later, and they bumped him up to 13. I don't know. Yeah, there's been some nerds mentioning on the double overtime recently. Maybe the nerds helped Nate George's stats out a little bit there. I thought he played well. Obviously, this team can figure out how to play in close games and play at the end, close things out, and it's all Donnie.
Yeah, Griff, you mentioned the three-pointers, the disparity, and, making Florida State shoot 21 free throws in the second half. I wasn't really too concerned about that, honestly. I thought Syracuse made a really strong adjustment out of the break. I know you mentioned Florida State scored more points in the second half. Both teams did. I think they forced more contested looks from beyond the arc because Florida State was going to need to continue to shoot at that high level to win this game. And they shot 14 threes in the first half. And 13 in the second half. The volume was still there, but they dropped the 23% from downtown in the second half. And I think when you look at the defensive effort last night, it wasn't good. I mean, it wasn't really that good, but the adjustment they made, I mean, they forced 9 turnovers in the second half. So you could definitely see there was something starting to click down the stretch. And I felt like once again, this was another game where no matter what the score was, with 10 minutes left, with 4 minutes left, you just didn't think there was a way Syracuse was going to lose it. You just thought they were hitting too many shots on the offensive end, and they were getting one more stop than Florida State was defensively. And I think, once again, you're going to look at – I don't know about you guys. Plus minus is a big thing in basketball. I think it's a great evaluator. And, you know, regardless of how hot and cold Tyler Betsy was at the start of the season, you look at last night, Tyler Betsy tied for the team lead in plus minus. That's how you know that his effect was equal on both ends. But Donnie Freeman is special. When you look at plus minus, what Donnie Freeman does, his impact when he is on the court, Syracuse is winning the game. You know, when he goes out, Syracuse starts to slip. And so I know we've said it, and I know it might be as obvious as it sounds, but this team is going to go as Donnie Freeman goes. And, you know, I think we'll get a little bit more into the depth of this team a little bit later on. But Donnie Freeman is probably the most important player that Adrian Autry has coached since he's been in Syracuse. There is no more important player that needs to be on the court for Syracuse in close games than Donnie Freeman.
Yeah, certainly. There's no arguing it. And since he's come back from injury, he has been a different player. The best we've ever seen of Donnie Freeman on campus here at Syracuse. You know, his freshman year, he never showed signs like this of the type of performances. 20-plus point games in the last three contests, and he's shooting at a great clip, too. He shot 75% last night, and he's even hitting some threes. He drained three against Pitt on Saturday. And, you know, he wasn't on those draft mock boards at the start. You got to enjoy it while he's here because it, you know, probably won't be here much longer. But that he is certainly the key, and it really is going to show how far Donnie Freeman goes is how far this team will go. And one other point I wanted to make with William Cotton, I thought he had another great game, 7 of 5, caught a few lobs, almost had a double-double, but I do 3 blocks. But I do feel like this team forgets about him sometimes, especially at the start of the game. You know, he wasn't really that involved, and he's the kind of player where you just got to get him the ball. You know, throw him the ball inside, throw him the lob in the paint, and Florida State had no answer. And there's tons of teams in the ACC that won't have answers for William Kyle. And I think this team, you know, it's up to really Nathan George and J.J. Starling to get him involved and to get him going right from the get-go. And I think that's something if this team doesn't forget about doing, those starts will maybe be a little better at each half, where things can be a little slow and stagnant at times. And again, I also think it's important for me to say great job to J.J. Starling in the last two games. I was really critical of him after the Georgia Tech game. He's really found his rhythm, and they said on the broadcast that he hasn't felt like himself up until now, up until that Pitt game. And in these last two games, he has looked like, you know, the best versions of J.J. Starling we've seen in the 3 years that he's played for Syracuse. 15 points last night, 19 against the Panthers, and both really good shooting in that 60 to 70% range. And he even was hitting threes against Pitt. So those are good signs for Syracuse when you get Nate George with all those assists. I know the turnovers, people are going to be mad about that. I think he's still a really quality point guard. You're getting, you know, 13, 11 assists. And that's pretty darn good. And then J.J. Starling clicking as well is also really good. And then now you have a great bench option in Tyler Betsy. If he can keep his rhythm going, that's exactly what you want from your sixth man, a guy to come off the bench and knock down a few threes. I mean, you can't ask for much more there. Sadiq White just has to keep his head on. It's pretty simple. It's like the second time he's gotten a technical foul because he's a very dynamic player. You know, that's how you lose trust, though, you know, in a player if they're going to pick up technical fouls. So if he wants to keep his minutes, he's got to stop getting those technical fouls. But, you know, I think we're finally weighing in these last two games more positives than we are negatives for Adrian Autry.
Yeah. And I mean, we talk about how good Don has been. And if you're a Syracuse fan, get used to this being the last season of Donnie Freeman.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had questions about whether he could be in the league just like a month and a half ago. Like when he was out with injury, we're like, all right, is Donnie serious? Like, do people actually think he can make the league? Yeah, Donnie Freeman will be playing in the NBA and will probably get drafted. That's the case. Now, there's still a lot of time to be played this season. But the thing that has really struck me this season with Donnie, more so to last season, is that although he's getting 20 points, although he's scoring the ball at will sometimes. He's making winning plays. There was times last season when Donnie was not making winning plays. Donnie's been efficient this season. 9 of 12 from the field yesterday. That's big. He's not taking 20 shots and only making 9. He's not taking 15 shots and only making 6. This is an efficient Donnie. He's rebounding the ball. He had a block, 3 steals, getting active defensively, 8 rebounds, taking the pressure away from William Kyle a little bit. Because when Donnie was out, William Kyle had to do a lot of rebounding. That's a player that will be all ACC team, that can lead a team to make a run in the ACC tournament, get a team to March Madness. And Syracuse fans, you got to think, he's one of your best players in the last 10 years, at least the last 5. And that's exciting. It's exciting to have a level of player to the level of Donnie Freeman. Another thing I want to mention, I was impressed by Autry today a little, or yesterday a little, that even though, he likes to play Nate Kings, he wasn't afraid to go with Betsy. Now, yes, Betsy only played 22 minutes and had 6 threes, but that's the 22 minutes, probably a little more than he would play if he didn't wasn't knocking down threes. Play the hot hand. That's so important. There was time when Nate Kings put up like 18, 19 points in the first half earlier in the season, and then didn't like put up a shot in the second half. There's been that kind of games. Ride the hot hands. Get the ball into your guys that are working well that game, because there's a lot of options that can scorch. Play who's ever been playing well.
Yeah, I mean, sure, if we talked about it before they started this 4-game stretch, 3 on the road, against these, sort of weaker ACC teams. We said there's no room for error here. They need to win all four, and they've won 3 of the 4. They've won the first 3 so far, and they've looked pretty darn good doing it. A couple of things I also noticed. I mean, Griffin just seems to have his way with people in this way, but if Griffin starts ranting about a certain individual that plays on the basketball team, chances are that player will go on to have a spectacular next 2 games. You saw it with Akir Suare, who had just a fine 6 points over that 2-game span after that crash out. And then you had JJ Starling, who just returned to his 2024 form in the last 2 games, which is just awesome. And then one more thing I really noticed last night, and even in the Pitt game too, Syracuse defensively has started to just kind of randomly switch into a zone. And they did it last year a couple times, and it didn't work. There were several times last year where they just got torched, probably because they didn't have the big man down low to stop it. Donnie was out, and Eddie Lampkin was I don't even know, a rock. I mean, he was a statue down low. There really wasn't much he could do down low. So, now when you have the athleticism of Donnie and Will Kyle in the lineup, you have that presence in the paint. They can't score inside on you as easily. And I think they've done a great job of mixing the looks up defensively. It confused Pitt and it confused Florida State last night. And I mean, when they have that in the bag of tricks, they can really pull that out against any team successfully. And when Syracuse is good defensively, as they have been in years prior, many, many years prior, they've shown that it's one of the harder teams to beat in the ACC. And I know a lot of guys on Twitter have started to talk about it, but this is a team that is starting to be known as someone that's going to compete with anyone this year. I mean, the offense is really starting to click. Syracuse is a scary team in the ACC right now.
And they could keep things just as scary if they, handle business just like they've done in these last 2 games. I know it's been close at times, but Boston College is not a very good team. We will learn more about Boston College a little later on. We had the pleasure of speaking with Eric Galanti, one of the voices of BC. So we'll hear from him a little bit later on about this Boston College team and the ACC as a whole. BC is 176 in the net. So that'll be another quad three opportunity and one that Syracuse needs to handle if they want to keep these tournament aspirations. Once again, things, as we've mentioned, are going on the right path. And also last night, I'm sure if you were watching the game, you noticed Calvin Russell was on the bench. He is here on campus, two-way athlete, going to be playing football and basketball. Fran Brown was even there. I guess he was just there to see if Russell would get on the floor. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if he plays at some point. I'll be honest, I've only really watched his like football high school highlights. Haven't watched a whole lot of basketball. I mean, I don't know. Do we think he'll get on the floor?
He's a lefty,
Okay.
and I saw his form. Didn't look too bad. I don't
He
think he'll
looks
get.
like a stud.
Yeah, he looks like a 5-star football prospect. But I don't think he'll get on the floor.
I think he'll play on Saturday against Boston College.
Do
You
you
think
think
he'll?
they're
I think he'll play on Saturday.
that means they're gonna be up by 25 at 30
They're
at
gonna win by
least?
25. They're gonna win by 25.
All right. I don't know. I think, yes, BC is bad. They are an ACC team. Syracuse doesn't play well in Conti form. Syracuse doesn't usually play well against bad ACC teams anyways. It'll be interesting. If it's hard to think, like, if it's not this game, what
That's what I was
game
going to
would it
say.
be?
If it's not tomorrow, it's not going to be this.
Yeah, so hopefully Syracuse can do Calvin Russell a favor, you know. It would be awful to have someone like Calvin Russell join the team and then, you never know the ego of a 5-star recruit, but hopefully he can get in some minutes, make sure Fran can keep his head l little level, and make sure Calvin Russell is in good spirits once spring practice comes around. I think after this BC game, the next two games, Virginia Tech, Miami. Those are the most two important games of the season. You need to win one of them. You win both of those games, and that could potentially be two quad one opportunities. At least one quad one and a quad two opportunity. Miami is a good team. Virginia Tech's a good team. They're both at home. You need to win both of those games, and that will give you so much confidence. Because after that, you're at NC State and you're playing Quadir Copeland. And NC State's a really good team. They're well coached by Will Wade, who's dealt with his own things, but he's a good coach. They're a good team. And then it only gets harder. It's mostly quad one and quad two from then on. Like, you got two games that are winnable. They're at the Dome. Virginia Tech is a 9 p.m. game, so that's a whatever. But Miami in the Dome. On a Saturday, 2 p.m. That's also a game that, like, last time Syracuse played Miami in the Dome was buzzer
Buzzer beater.
beater.
Yep.
Shout out Quadir Copeland for that.
Shout out Ethan Frank on the call. Ostrom Pod
form,
member, former.
yep, former Ostrom Pod member. I said. Anyways, so like these are two very important games. Syracuse would need to win first. You gotta take care of business against Boston College. And then you can start talking business.
Yeah, I think Adrian Autry needs to send a bottle of champagne to the ACC schedule maker. Taking a quote out of Fran Brown's line there, because this is back-to-back years they've had a pretty smooth start to ACC schedule-wise. Now, not record-wise last year, considering the fact that Syracuse is just one win away from tying its regular season win total from last season. But I mean, look at the tune-ups that Syracuse gets before they actually have to play tougher ACC teams. I mean, outside of Clemson, Georgia Tech, Pittsburgh, Florida State, and Boston College. As four of your first five, there's no UNC, there's no NC State, there's no Duke, there's no Virginia, there's no one in there that is a real threat to you. That, like, there's no one that they couldn't handle in the first five games. And they were winning that Clemson game towards the end, that just kind of slipped away. I mean, that is pretty incredible that Syracuse has avoided all of the big dogs to start the year in the ACC play. And hopefully that means that they're building the momentum to attack these teams because, like you said, Griff, there's not going to be many more quad three opportunities after this week. So capitalizing on these games is important, and I hope to see Calvin Russell get a bucket here on Saturday.
I'm just waiting for the Noah Lobdell lob to Calvin Russell. I mean, that'll be sensational
Hook
if we see
off.
that happen. Yeah, get ready for that. Yeah, it's only if they handle business against BC, which I wouldn't mind a blowout. You don't get many blowouts with Syracuse. To the women's side, they had a humongous victory over the weekend against Virginia Tech, and This one, or rather UVA, and this one was really important for Coach Jack's team. And it started with Layla Filia, who had a fantastic day, 38 points. We've been kind of wanting this from Filia. Her scoring was dipping in the last few games, really stepping up. And another player that all three of us were kind of asking to step up to the plate, Sophie Burrows, was huge. Knocked down seven threes, 21 points. Big day from her. And as a whole, their most impressive win of the season after they had a difficult home defeat right before this road trip. Now they handle business over the weekend and get a massive win. And they have Cal coming up here on Thursday. And for Syracuse, I think it will mainly just be about keeping these good times rolling and doing what's right. I think that starting 4-5 is pretty nailed down. Bench wise, I don't think Coach Jack really knows who her best option is off the bench. They have a lot of players who can play, but it's about finding that consistency. But against Virginia, that 79-60 win, really one of the most impressive, I don't know, ever. I mean, Coach Jack has had a lot of really impressive victories, but I mean, Griff, this was one that, they weren't favored to win. They weren't expected to get a win. And I mean, they really blew things out of the water in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was a close game throughout. It was one that, like, okay, it's tied. There, Syracuse was up by two going into the fourth quarter, but on the road, Virginia was a really good team. Virginia's ranked after, even after that loss, they're still ranked ahead of Syracuse in the net at 39. Syracuse coming at 42. So that's a quad one win for Syracuse. It's first of the season, and that's big resume builder. Virginia's a squad that's been going up and down the past couple of years, but they've really solidified themselves as a team that wants to compete. They got a big donation from Virginia alum Alexis Ohanian, who his wife is Serena Williams, who co-founded Reddit, but he really wants to build up this Virginia team, and so they want to compete. And for Coach Jack to just go down there, hey, star players, be star players. And that's essentially what happened. Ophelia has played well. She's had good games. 38 is something we haven't seen. Like, that's insane. For Ophelia to go for 38, only 2 3-pointers, that she was attacking the basket, getting to the free throw line, 10 of 11 is something that you would love to see. And then, I hate to say it again, but Sophie Burrows made her threes and the team played well. 21 points, 7 3-pointers. I mean, there's not much else to say about that. Shout out 5 steals also, and then 3 from Filia. Turning defense into offense is something that Coach Shaq is all about. And if Filia and Burrows play well, this team's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, something I noticed from this game, Aurora Almone got the start. Maybe kind of a defensive adjustment there, but Coach Jack has really changed a lot of people into that fifth starting spot this year. Journey Thompson has started there. Shai Hawkins has started there. Angelica Velez, I believe, has even gotten a start there. So there's been a lot of different names that she's kind of twisted around there in that fifth starting spot. If she wants to go big, if she wants to go small, that's been interesting. And I mean, Griffin, Sophie Burrow. 4 of 4 from downtown in the fourth quarter. Syracuse scored 51 points in the second half of this game. And that can't be understated. They were losing this game by 6 points at halftime. And just to make a complete switch in the second half, I mean, they were really struggling to find good looks in the first half. Ophelia had 18 at the break. So it's not like this team was, just a Layla Ophelia do it all in the second half to get those 51. No, this was a complete switch at halftime. And I know we mentioned it in that loss to Va Tech. Uche Azoje kind of struggled in that loss. She wasn't great offensively, and they lost. And I said, well, if it's Azoje and Burrows that are both off on the same night, it's going to be very hard for Syracuse to win games. And Azoje struggled again, 30% from the field, but this time Sophie Burrows slides in perfectly and picks up her teammate there, and she knocks down 7 fake threes. And, maybe she's having her JJ Starling moment. Starling a little bit struggling at the start of the season. He's hurt a little bit. We don't know if Sophie Burrows is hurt, obviously, but a little bit slow start. Now we get into ACC play and she's starting to turn it around. Just that one tough game against Virginia Tech. But I mean, she had, 12, 14 points in a couple of those first games. And now she's really hitting her stride. I mentioned the defensive aspect of it as well. 5 steals, definitely nothing to complain about. And I'm still very confident in this SU women's team.
Yeah, just got to find that consistency with their scoring options. And next, they got Cowan. Cal will be no pushover. Coach Smith has their team playing some really good defense. They haven't had an easy schedule either. And they've held six Power Four teams to under their season scoring average. So they play some really good defense. And they'll need to do that after Syracuse probably put out its best offensive display, at least from two players, all season long. So they have Cal Thursday at home at six against the Golden Bears. And Cal is ranked 61 in the net, so they're no pushover. And really, the rest of the ACC slate, there aren't a ton of pushovers. To the gridiron, because we're still talking about football even in the dead of winter now. Fran Brown, he wanted at the end of the season, he said, I want to bring in two quarterbacks. He's got one, Kennesaw State. And he basically did a swap. Ricky Collins went one way, and then Kennesaw State starting quarterback Omar Odom is coming the other way. He is a sophomore. He got a redshirt sophomore. He did play his first two seasons at Watford, but that first season, I am assuming, has been redshirted, cut off. So he will be a redshirt junior coming in. So he'll have some years of eligibility left. He's from Inglewood, California, and he put up great numbers for a really good Kennesaw State team. And really, I think this just emphasizes the approach that Fran Brown had in the transfer portal. It was less about getting guys with little to no experience, more about getting guys who've actually played. Ricky Collins, Luke Carney, who also he transferred to Houston. I'd be interested to see his career output, because I think we all three of us think Luke Carney can actually play, and for whatever reason, they didn't want him to play last year. That will be a question that will forever go unanswered. But he's at Houston. But Ricky Collins, Luke Carney had no experience. Griffin Odom, this is a guy who's played football before, and it looks as though he can actually play football and can play quarterback at a high level.
Yeah, it's the good old Ricky Collins, Kennesaw State switcheroo. I'm sure everyone saw that coming. That was probably the most predictable thing that is that. I'm just kidding. But yeah, you have a guy with experience. A little weird the Syracuse hasn't brought in anyone else. I noticed that Jakari Williams hasn't committed anywhere, so maybe my guy's coming back. Who knows? Who knows? Players can withdraw from the portal. Anwar Sparrow did it last year. I think I saw that he just declared for the NFL draft. Couple guys, Emmanuel Ross, Jaden Hart going to UConn following Nunzio Campanelli, who's their new offensive coordinator. It's exciting. There's one transfer that I really saw that I was like, okay. And it was weird because he hadn't really been like a big time I wouldn't say recruit, but big time rank. His rank wasn't high in the portal. From UNLV, defensive lineman. Oh, let me find his name. I think it's well, even if I see it, I'm gonna butcher it. It's Tunmise Adeleye. We'll get that closer to football season. But six sacks. That's something where Syracuse really did not have a lot of success, was getting pressure to the quarterback. So good thing that GoTrans getting more people to play up front. As far as Amari Odom, the level of competition, way different from Kennesaw State to Syracuse. Hopefully you won't see the field at all, if not too much. Because hopefully Syracuse has its quarterback with Steve Angeli, but good to know that they at least found a guy. Who knows if he's going to be the guy, but they found a guy to add another person to that room. And if you know Syracuse and its track record with keeping quarterbacks healthy, Kyle McCord, one of the very few in past 10 years to stay healthy for a whole season. So odds are Syracuse will need at least one or two backup quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think Odom is everything. Fran Brown basically just completely flipping the switch in his mind. And I think we're starting to see this trend a little bit more in college football. The transfer portal is way more not only efficient, but a better evaluator than recruiting. I mean, you go get Ricky Collins, who was a four-star recruit and didn't play at LSU, and he didn't have any game experience under his belt, and he arrives on campus and he just looks like he doesn't know how to play quarterback. And you go and get someone who was an all-conference player in the Conference USA, and you basically just substitute him in for Ricky Collins. I mean, you said it right there, the trade. I mean, that's it's kind of insane that even happened. I mean,
Luka Doncic, Anthony Davis level trade?
Who's Luka Doncic here? It
don't
might be
know.
Odom. It might be Odom because, well, my goodness, Ricky Collins and Anthony Davis could not be farther apart from each other. But in seriousness here, I mean, this is what you want. If you're a Syracuse football fan and you are looking at what went so wrong last season, Syracuse goes and gets, you know, big names or whatever you want to call it from big schools, but they don't have any playing experience. There's nothing more you can ask for than your coach making that switch and going to get guys with proven experience who did not only a good job in their conference, but were all conference players. I mean, there's really not much higher on the ladder you can go. I mean, he's not going to be able to go out and get, you know, a power five starting quarterback and bring him here to compete for a job. So this is about as good as he can do, and he did that. So I think you have to feel very confident, Griffin. You want to say something?
Yeah, and that's the thing that I've kind of noticed from the portal this season is for Syracuse, it hasn't been – they haven't gotten the power conference starter that they have in the past couple of years. Kyle McCord was the big one 2 years ago. Last year, you can talk about Jonte Cook and his playing time all you want. But he's a guy that had power conference experience playing at a really high level. This season, you haven't really gotten that. And now, is that a problem? Not necessarily. Syracuse doesn't necessarily need a guy. And honestly, I don't think Syracuse can get a guy that has power conference experience really playing. Because those guys are going to get paid. And Syracuse doesn't necessarily have the budgets of a Texas Tech or a Texas or Oklahoma State's paying for North Texas's whole roster at this point. So that's one thing that's interesting. Syracuse right now has got 14 incoming transfers, 27 outgoing transfers. And there's still a lot of Syracuse guys that haven't committed anywhere. So that's interesting. Derek McDonald saw he went to North Carolina. That will be a fun one, you know, Bill Belichick getting his guy in Derek McDonald. It's the type of player Bill Belichick will
another
like to...
another trade that happened. You had Trevor Peña get traded to Penn State. It was a future prospect in that deal. They got Matt Outten, who was a 4-star. He didn't play in his freshman season at Penn State, but he's a viable prospect, 6'1", 210, that will join the Orange receiving corps. It's very depleted. Certainly far from complete there, but I'd expect him to be on the field. Good prospect there.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly. And by the time you're listening to it, the transfer portal may be closed. We're recording this Wednesday morning, January 14th. The portal closes January 16th. And again, important to emphasize, there is no more spring window. So that window where they were able to get Steve Angeli, that window does not exist anymore. Which I think is probably a good thing. And I think it's also interesting to mention, I want to get your guys' thoughts on it, the FBS football coaches voted unanimously yesterday to allow players to participate in 9 games and then still be able to redshirt, which 9 games seems like a lot.
This is approved?
I don't know if it's approved yet, but it was unanimously voted.
Yeah. It was voted. It has to go to like the presidents of schools or some board or something. It's not enacted yet, but it seems like it will be. Cool. That's kind of crazy. I mean, it's essentially just adding a fifth year and just kind of making it so that everyone gets a fifth year.
Yeah.
Unless you're, why am I blanking on names? Anyways, unless you're like a really, really good freshman and you want to play.
Russell, Demetrius Samuel Jr.
Sure, Demetrius Samuel. That's who I was looking for. It's an early morning episode if you haven't realized. But those are guys that like, all right, if you think about this and like now if you're not going pro in 3 years, you really have to think about using a redshirt year. And it makes coaches think a little bit more. You can sit out the first 4 games and then play through the bowl game. Like that's now a thing.
So it'll be interesting. Is it a good thing? Who knows? Is it a bad thing? Who knows? It's college football, and in 2 years, everyone could have 6 years for all we know. Who knows? I mean, everyone essentially gets a fifth year. I don't think it changes a whole lot.
It's not, no, it's not a good thing. Griff, what is with the deal with college football or any college sport in general? I don't understand. Why all of a sudden are we just issuing fifth and sixth and seventh? Did you see TJ Finley transferred again yesterday? Did anyone see that? He's
In
on his
Carmen Mate
sixth. He's on
Worlds.
his sixth college. I don't understand where there's no rules. I mean, he's played at every school he's gone to, and now he's going to Incarnate Word, hashtag Cam Warren University. Why is this allowed? I mean, they should have to get one free transfer, and then they can sit out if they want to transfer again. This is ridiculous.
All right, Josh, I'll make sure to write to Charlie Baker. You can join the committee, make all the
Yeah,
rules. Might as well
I like that.
want to write a bill too. I mean, I'm serious. Like there's just no structure in this anymore. It's
It'll be dissolved in
ridiculous.
5 years. That's been my take for the last 5 years. It hasn't been dissolved in 5 years, but it will be dissolved in 5 years.
Right. I kind of like that. That's my message from now on.
The SEC
Hey.
and Big Ten will make a giant super conference. Hashtag it just means more. And they will have their own exclusive college football playoff where only the best teams can play. It's gonna go downhill. It's a ticking time bomb, and it will eventually explode. And that will be the downfall of college sports as we know it. And that will really, really be eye-opening when that happens.
Well, if that comes
Don't
true,
mean to
that
get too dark on you guys on this beautiful Wednesday morning here in Syracuse.
if that all happens, I know where I'll be listening, the Ostrom Avenue podcast. That's all that we got to cover. We covered a lot, Syracuse men's and women's basketball, and getting into football. It's time to swing it over to Eric Griffin and Josh. Had the pleasure of talking to him. He has a lot of great things to say. You won't want to miss it. It's Eric and Josh and Griffin.
We now have the pleasure of being joined by BC men's basketball play-by-play broadcaster Eric Galanti and WAER alum class of 2015. Eric, how are you doing? Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Obviously, BC, it's been a rough couple of seasons. Earl Grant is, maybe under the hot seat. We'll touch on that a little bit later, but ACC play hasn't gone the way of the Eagles so far, 0-3, but they have kept a couple games close. They were hanging around with Louisville and NC State until both teams kind of went on late runs. What have you seen from BC at the start of ACC play? And, have they ramped up after having a couple missteps in non-conference play?
Yeah, the biggest thing for Boston College, and it's kind of been true through the whole non-conference season, and it continues to be true in the ACC, not so much the Clemson game, but some of the other games, has just been, finishing these games out, right? And it's something that Earl Grant's talked about all year long. This idea of, okay, if we get up by 5 points, can we push it to eight? If we're up by 11 points, can we push it to 14? And that was one of the things early in the season where you saw some non-conference games that, I mean, it seems crazy to say this, but there were so many just close, tight games that truly could have gone either way, and their record could be completely different than it is right now if some of those games flip. And it's not even that much of a leap to say that. But yeah, they've just had some struggle finishing games, and then you take that to the ACC side of it with obviously a little bit better competition. A game like NC State where they're in kind of the whole way, a game like Louisville where obviously a good team, tough place to play on the road, but they're up in that game for a long time and just don't quite have enough right now to finish the job. But that's been the biggest thing for this Boston College team this year.
Yeah, pretty similar to Syracuse. 1 point loss to Hofstra, an overtime loss to Houston. Feels like there's quite a few games that have could have gone in the Orange's favor. A little bit more on the head coaching side of things. I mean, there's obviously been questions about head coach Adrian Autry here. BC's on a 16-year March Madness drought right now. So I guess what do you think you've seen out of Earl Grant in his first few seasons to show that the Eagles can compete in the near future for a spot in the Big Dance?
Yeah, I think the thing with, obviously Earl's not responsible for that whole time, but one of the, it's a difficult job that's clearly been proven out over the last, 2 decades plus. It's in a tough spot being in the ACC now. Obviously they did have some success early on. I think the thing when you look at an Earl Grant coach team, he talks a lot about defense, a lot about grittiness, a lot about toughness, all of those things. And you do see moments of that. And a lot of times this year for Boston College, it's actually been the offense, which has been somewhat of the struggle point, not so much the defense, which does, fall in line with what we've seen from Earl Grant teams in the past. The thing that I think you hold your hat on if you're a Boston College fan talking about Earl Grant is pretty consistently through his time. Last year, not quite as much, but really every year early in his tenure, his teams really got better as they hit the month of February. And even a couple of times, it was 2 years ago, they made a little bit of a run in the ACC tournament. Couple of years ago, just even getting to the ACC tournament. So his teams do tend to improve as the year has gone on. And I think that's his biggest calling card right now. He's a good culture builder. And I think that's the things that you're kind of holding on to for Earl Grant is can this team get on a little bit of a run late in the season as they have a couple of times earlier in his tenure?
You mentioned the defense being a strength. Sometimes when a team starts to struggle, that tends to slip away. It hasn't really been the case for Boston College. Is it because of Coach Grant's emphasis on defense, and why so? Can BC be a top five team scoring defense-wise in the conference?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely it. It's something that he's preached throughout his whole time, before when he was the head coach at College of Charleston, and then when he's now been the head coach of Boston College, he really puts an emphasis on his defensive play. Sometimes you'll see him on the sidelines looking like he's almost playing defense along with the team. And, the numbers do back that up. One of the things that adds to this year's version of this BC team is their ability to block shots. And that comes from having guys like a Jaden Hastings, like a Bowden Capke. It's interesting because those were two guys that Earl Grant recruited when they were both coming out. Bowden Capke decides to go to Butler. Jaden Hastings comes to BC. Now he has both of them at Boston College. So some two people he's known for a long time, Aiden Shaw coming in, a veteran player from Missouri. So you do have a lot of veteran guys who have come in, Forte, who was the Summit League Defensive Player of the Year last year. So there's definitely guys that really have that as their calling card. And it's important for Boston College when they've had success.
Okay, and a little bit now, if we flip to the offensive end, Syracuse has really scored a lot of points the last few games, but they're going to meet a different match. We've mentioned the defense, but Boston College just plays a methodically slow version of basketball. They're 261st in the nation in possessions per game and really just try and focus on drying you out defensively. How does that focus on, taking the shot clock down, not focusing on transition offense and more of settling on that set offense translate to the product on the court?
Yeah, I think it's been a big point of emphasis, especially the last couple of weeks, is shot selection for Boston College and really trying to find those good looks. Some of the trends early in the season was you saw them fairly high ranked in terms of 3-point attempts in the ACC, but obviously near the bottom in terms of 3-point shooting percentage in the ACC. That's been a little bit better as the season has gone on, now obviously playing tougher competition, but it's really been about shot selection when it comes to pace, when it comes to all that stuff. It's trying to identify, Fred Payne, how do you get him good looks? How do they spark Donald Hand a little bit? Someone who obviously has been, an important player the last couple of years for BC, has struggled from the 3-point line this year. So, but he's almost too good a player to not keep putting out there and trying to get him out of his slump. And you have seen it at times. So it's really all about shot selection for BC. When they're driving the basketball, when they're getting to the rim, they do have some athletes that feel like they can do some things offensively. When they find themselves settling a little bit for 3-point shots, and when that shot is not going in, that's when they start to struggle a little bit offensively.
You mentioned Donald Hand. He's been last year was kind of his breakout year. What does he mean for a program like Boston College, where if someone elsewhere might have had that type of season, might have transferred to a better power conference program? What does it mean to BC to have a type of guy like that stay around?
Yeah, I think it's a credit to Earl Grant. I think it's a credit to the culture that he's built, that Donald Hand and Jaden Hastings too decided to come back and stick it with Boston College. It's a tricky spot for him. And one of the things that Earl Grant just talked about the other day is that, when you go from even last year is sort of his breakout year, when you go from, kind of most improved guy and you're kind of building to all of a sudden you're number one on everyone's scout, you're number one on everyone's defensive assignment list, that is a little bit of a different challenge. And that does take somewhat of an adjustment period. And it has for him. Early in the season, he was struggling not just from the three-point line, but also from the free throw line. To his credit, he has really worked hard and gotten back at the free throw line, kind of where he was last year, as one of the best free throw shooters in the ACC. The three-point shot, we've seen better spurts of it. 3 for 5 from three against NC State. He made 3 for Louisville, wasn't super efficient, but he did make three. So it feels like slowly but surely that 3-point shot is starting to come back a little bit. Obviously, he struggled in the game against Clemson, which is the last game before we're talking here, but he's a really important piece. Fred Payne at times has been maybe a little bit more of a driver just because he's played well this year. But still, when Boston College, if they're going to go right, it's really going to come down to Donald Hand and his getting back to that level that he was last year.
And maybe a little bit of a different kind of side of things here with, the culture he's built and keeping players. He also went out and got one of the more talented transfers in the portal last year. Chase Forte was a Summit League Defensive Player of the Year. He averaged 17 points per game last season in South Dakota. What has his impact been? He's been at four different schools. How was his prior experience finally transferred to a power conference level of play?
Yeah, that was definitely a point of emphasis in the offseason for Earl Grant because, he did have some guys coming back, but it was still slightly skewed on the young side. So he did try to go out and get guys who had just played college basketball, right? And had a lot of college basketball experience. So Forte certainly fits that. Aiden Shaw certainly fits that, 3 years at Missouri. So, even in that situation, maybe not playing a ton, but certainly had played a lot of minutes. And then when he first came in, one of his first press conferences was like, we were picked last in the league, but I just don't believe that. And he kind of, it felt like it just fit exactly what Earl Grant is trying to build, is trying to preach. So I think it's as much from the culture side of things, as much as anything on the court, that he's really fit that. In terms of on the court, they needed a point guard. So you have him, you have Luka Toews, who's honestly kind of taken a step this year. So those two have been able to be that point guard rotation for Boston College. But it's that culture fit that's really made Forte an important piece.
Do you think the jump to power conference basketball has impacted Forte at all and, led to maybe him not playing near to the level he did last season?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a different level, right? I think some of it actually has less to do with him and more to do with how well Luka Toews has played in spurts. Not to say that was a surprise, because I think that Boston College did have expectations for him to kind of take a jump in this second year, but it's more him kind of asserting himself and forcing his way onto the floor, right? And I think some of it is that, some of those defensive numbers, which maybe don't show up quite as much in box scores as maybe the offensive stuff. Toews has been a little bit of a better offensive player this year, and obviously BC has needed that at times. So I think it has more to do with that as much as anything else.
Well, it's been pretty undeniable the last few games. Fred Payne has become this team's number one scoring option. 20 plus points in 4 of his last 5 games. What's unique about his game that you've noticed? And he's one of those players that Earl Grant has kept for 3 seasons now. What has his development been like the past few years?
Yeah, another example of kind of the build of a player that Earl Grant is certainly hoping for. I think the thing with Fred, and you saw it a couple times in the non-conference, and maybe the name of the jersey on the other side might not be the team you'd want this to be against, but there were some moments in those non-conference games where BC was down after a first half or really needed something, and sort of that indefinable quality of when you just need someone to take over a game. And Fred was that guy. And there was a bunch of different times where he, was able to do that and get BC some life and get them either closer to getting back in it or coming out with a victory. I think the thing that's most, you give Earl Grant credit for is that Fred struggled a little bit early in the season. He was just 4 of 18 from the floor in those first 2 games of the year, but he really stuck with him and he allowed him to kind of shoot his way out of it, to get his 3-point shot down, to do some of those things. The other thing in terms of the Forte question too is a lot of times we'll see Fred kind of slide over to the point in certain situations, depending on what Boston College is trying to do. They go with a little bit of a bigger lineup, whatever the case may be. And he's been able to really do a nice job in that role. So he just kind of stayed with it, but he's very assertive. He kind of understands moment, time, and space in a really unique way. And he's just had a, awesome impact on this Boston College team.
If BC is going to win this game on Saturday, where is it going to come from? How is BC going to beat Syracuse if they do?
Well, some of this, probably has less to do with Syracuse and more just general basketball stuff. But, I think number one is the start, right? They got it against Louisville. They hadn't gotten it in a lot of games, but they got it against Louisville. So that's number one, right? If you don't start well, you're not going to be in the game to begin with, number one. Number two, there's probably going to be a lot of orange in the crowd. That happens sometimes when Syracuse comes in, obviously a big alumni base in Boston. So, not letting the crowd become a factor for Syracuse. But in terms of the actual game, I think guys like Hastings and Kapke become really important because of what we've seen Syracuse be able to do in the paint here recently. So not letting, it be one of those games where you see 30 points in the paint, 40 points, whatever the case may be. And then as we've talked about so often, like, can that 3-point shot go down in a way where you're not forced, into 25, 28 looks at it, but you can get some looks early, and that allows you to kind of run that offense that we're talking about, that you can be a little more selective and you're not kind of like having to shoot your way back into the game. So they can do some of those games. There's no reason that, look, they've been competitive in most games this year. Obviously, the record isn't exactly where they'd want to be. Outside of that Clemson game, they've been pretty much competitive most of the year. So if you can do some of those things, there's no reason that they can't hang in. And then, it becomes at the end of the game, 50-50 game, and you see what happens.
All right, Eric, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it. And good luck to the Eagles on Saturday.
Appreciate you guys having me.
Big thanks to Eric for taking the time to talk with us before Syracuse and Boston College. That's next on the docket for Adrian Autry's group. That is Saturday, January 17th, a 2 p.m. tip. So much earlier tip. No 9 p.m. We do have one more 9 p.m. left, though. McClure Remodeling countdown to tip-off begins at 1:30. The double overtime goes all the way until 6 p.m. And if you're listening to this before Friday evening, you got sports night as well to listen to Friday at 8. So plenty of options for you to get in tune on this basketball team that maybe is making a run into the big dance. Maybe still a lot of work to be done. And it all starts with Boston College on Saturday. Be sure to listen to previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts. We've recapped basically every game in the ACC for Syracuse men's basketball and talked plenty of football transfer portal and lacrosse. Don't forget, lacrosse season is right there upon us. That'll do it for this week's episode. A nice long one for you to listen to, so hopefully everyone likes that. We will see you next week to keep hammering home this Syracuse men's basketball team and get you ready for lacrosse season.